Welcome to A Fine Time for Healing, a place for your physical, emotional, and spiritual well-being are all that matter. So put your feet up, relax, and enjoy today's show. And today's special guest, Robert Bray, PhD, LCSW, says that he exists for one reason and one reason only, to reduce suffering in the world. Okay, lofty, idealistic, outlandish? Some people might think that way, but he is not one of those people. In fact, he is confident that he plays a vital role in alleviating the pain associated with trauma and believes that he was born to do so on a global scale. Well, we need you so much. Dr. Bray's innovative approach to alleviating emotional pain equips people just like you to respond to difficult circumstances in a healthy, productive, and loving manner. And Dr. Robert Bray has over 30 years of experience as a professional therapist using thought field therapy in a solution-oriented approach. He identifies and eliminates those blocks to personal action needed to improve your situation, expand relationships, and enhance your performance. And he is the author of No Open Wounds. Welcome, Dr. Bray. Robert, what would you
Hi.
Prefer I call you?
Please call me Bob. And
Bob. Okay,
I'm
good.
really excited to be here and
Okay.
Would love to share this. One of the things people don't know is one of the best researched approaches to dealing with post-traumatic stress is something called energy psychology. And energy psychology covers several different types and approaches to the work that we do, including thought field therapy.
Okay.
But people may have also heard of something called emotional freedom technique, which is a derivative of Dr. Roger Callahan's work, who I learned
That's
from.
That's tapping.
Yep, you got it. It's tapping. And tapping is very effective. There's it's the best researched that there is. And I'll just put this out there in front for people who are interested in research. There's an organization called the Association for Comprehensive Energy Psychology. And that website, www.energypsych.org,
okay.
If you go there, you'll see a tab that says research. If you go to the research tab, you can hit quick facts and they'll come up with the list of, there's been over 250 articles published in peer-reviewed journals in the last 10, 20 years. And it talks about the research that shows this is so much better. There's meta-analysis there, which groups all that stuff together and then compares it to other approaches. And what they find is energy psychology is far and above anything else. So I'm not offering you something that's just, oh, I woke up this morning and thought this would work.
Right. Well, tell me a little bit about it, because I'm very familiar with energy healing, energy
okay.
work. So right. How does energy psychology work?
Well, okay, so energy psychology has several different types and techniques within it. It's a larger domain. But one of the ways that we define energy psychology is you're doing a psychological technique or an attempt to do something at that level at the same time that you're doing an energetic technique.
Okay.
So it combines the two.
Okay.
And so thought field therapy was the originator of this, Roger Callahan, started in, I think his first paper he did was in like 1978 into 1980. He was a psychologist with 50 years experience when a friend of his who was a psychiatrist said, hey, let me show you this thing I learned called applied kinesiology. And basically it's what it was, put your arm out, somebody pushes on your arm and you get different responses depending on what Roger later called how you tune your thought.
Yes.
And so he was fascinated by it because he was a very successful psychotherapist in the LA area, but he was always looking for something better. So he went and took the 100-hour course and came back and started looking at how do we apply this to psychological states and conditions. and first learned and started working with it in a lot of different ways. Now, I have to tell you may have to tell me to shut up because I do a 4-day training, and it's I do it a couple times a year here in San Diego, but it's a
I'll
live,
interrupt you if I need to.
okay, it's a live in-person training that goes on for 4 days with
Okay.
me just talking about this stuff.
Okay, great. Well,
So
I'm
I
still
have.
fascinated, so keep going.
Okay. So anyway, Roger, first he recognized that he was getting responses in, I want to be healthy, I want to be sick, I want to be over this weight problem, I want to keep this. You would expect that you would get certain responses, and he wasn't getting the responses, and he knew his patients very well. And
Okay.
so he started trying to figure out what it is that's going on. And what he found was is that in some conditions, when we tune to a thought, when we focus our perception, that sometimes we just go into a state of reversal where our energy just flips. So if you think about the fact that every cell in our body is polarly has a polar alignment
Okay.
with the world we are in and one another, that when that flips, nothing works. So he found a way to correct that flipping. So his testing started making more sense to him. And then he had a patient. He was trying to help her with, she had a water phobia. And what he found was is that having her tap on the stomach meridian here basically eliminated for her. Now that's pretty bizarre thing. So because it'd been a lifeline phobia. And I have this great video of Mary on a TV program with Roger 17 years after that first event.
That's amazing.
And it held. Now, that was pretty amazing that it was a one-tap healing, but I've seen it happen a couple of times in my career, but it's pretty unusual. But the brilliance of Roger was he didn't say, oh, that's interesting, and then go back to doing what he was doing. He then pursued the idea, is there a way that we can find that tapping point that will make the difference?
Oh,
And it
wow.
turns out there are 14 meridian flows in the body, and TFT, thought field therapy, we use all 14 of them at different points, stimulate them in different ways. But the
Okay.
idea is that we're stimulating these points in a way that activates the internal healing processes. And allows us to change at a fundamental, at the most fundamental level, what he called the thought field,
Wow.
our perceptions and our reactivity to what we're seeing around us. So anyway, he started developing that in the 80s. And in 1996, I took a course with him. And I'd already been doing a lot of traumatic stress work. Prior to that, I'd been doing crisis intervention since I was a freshman in college. And then I have a master's in social work. Then later I got a PhD in psychology. But when I came across thought field therapy, I'd been trained in EMDR, cognitive work, Gestalt. I just was like, this works in a way that nothing else does.
That is so interesting. And and the question that I have is that so is this possible to do virtually? Because so much now is done on the computer. I know that we can test ourselves,
Yes.
muscle test ourselves. I know that we can. And it's just really interesting to know that this is something. I just came from my acupuncturist and she told me about energy right here. She said, tap right here, that'll give you energy. So
Okay, she's talking about thymus tapping. And that's fine. The thing I want to 2 points. One is that because we're working with energy, energy in the sense that we're talking about it here is at a physics level. We're not talking about Newtonian physics. We're talking about quantum physics,
quantum physics,
which
okay.
moves us into a different world. And in the world of quantum physics, or even beyond that, what we know is that energy is, how do I say this? It's non-temporal. Time doesn't matter to it. It's non-spatial, distance doesn't matter to it. And that when you're working with energy, you can connect. I can connect with you at this moment. And if you will give me permission, I can do muscle testing on myself for you.
Okay.
So
Let's do
that's
it.
right. And oh, you want to give it a test?
I
You
want to
want
give it
to?
a test.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So what I'm going to do is in Thought Field Therapy, we never do role playing stuff. We work with real stuff.
Okay, great.
And Randy, you seem pretty together at this point, but all of us do. But there's always some stuff that when we look back or when we consider something, an event in the past that occurred to us, there may be some leftover stuff. And that's the beauty of TFT. I work with Vietnam vets who've had all the therapy in the world. But, 40 years later, 50 years later, there's still unfinished business in there. And we identify.
Now, do I need to know the event, or can I tell you where it's affecting me?
Well, you got both. I mean, if you know where it's affecting you, my guess is you could tell me where it comes from,
Okay.
right? And what I would ask you to do, and that's the beauty of TFT, is you only share what you want to share. So I would ask you to pull up that event, and however way you do that, that you come into contact with that sensation within your body.
Okay.
Okay, have you got it?
And let me think for a second because it's very broad over a period of time.
Trying to be it's the more specific, the more powerful the treatment. So just pick one
Okay.
and
All right.
grab one.
Got it. Got it.
Now notice that as soon as you brought that up, are you visual? Are you thinking in a picture of it? Or are you thinking in how does your memory happen? Is it just a sensation? What?
It's more sensation now,
Mm-hmm. But
and
do
I know what it is. You know,
Okay.
I can remember specifically what happened. Okay.
Okay. So you're remembering it in the way that you do. Some people are visual and so they remember in pictures. I'm not visual, so I don't remember that way. But so as you remember that event, notice what you feel in your body. Now I'm going to go a little slower than I normally would because I want people to see the process a little more clearly.
Okay.
Okay. Now notice where you feel it in your body. Can you tell me where you feel it in your body?
I feel it all up here.
Okay. And is it a burning, a swirling, a pressure, a
Pressure.
tension, pressure? So
Tightness. Tightness.
tightness. Okay. So on a scale of 0 to 10, with 0 being no tightness at all, and 10 being the worst tightness that you can imagine. As you feel it right now, and I know it's different than when the event happened, but as you tune into it right now, what's the level of tension that you feel, 0 to 10?
Eight.
Ooh, that's pretty intense. Okay. So what I'm going to do is because you showed some interest, I'm going to do the most advanced stuff so you can see how it works.
Okay, great.
So if I have your permission to do muscle testing for you,
You
what
do.
I'm going to do is I'm just going to use my finger. Okay, it's a lightweight muscle for me. It works. Okay, but so I just want to test and make sure we're connected. Say my name is Randy.
My name is Randy.
My name is George.
My name is George.
Okay, so notice when you the true affirmative statement, I got a response when it was a negative, untrue event, then
Okay.
I didn't get a response. So you're going to see my finger popping up and down as I do things.
Okay, great.
So what I want you to do is just think about the event, think about how you're feeling. And just to move very quickly, I want you to say crisis tapping pattern.
Crisis tapping pattern.
Say there's a better pattern.
There's a better pattern.
Now we'll start with the crisis tapping. Because then I don't have to find the points. It'll be right there. So what I'm going to ask you to do is tap here on the side of your hand. That's right. And then tap under your nose. Very good. Then I'm going to tap between the center line and the face in either eyebrow.
Between.
Yep. So we're actually working on a meridian and
Okay,
it
right
runs
here.
on. The meridians run on both sides of the body, front and back. These are just easy points to access them.
Okay.
And then tap here on the orbital bone under the eye. And then what I'd like you to do is tap under your arm, in the middle of your rib cage there. With women, we say where your bra comes across is an approximation.
That helps.
Yeah. And then tap under your collarbone. Now, the way you get there is you go to the notch of your throat here, and you go down about an inch or so, and then over an inch or two. And you'll feel below the collarbone, there's a little hollow spot where the collarbone and the sternum and the first rib kind of come together. Yeah, you're in there. You're in the ballpark. So just tap under that bone, under the collarbone. And then we're going to tap on the index finger. So you're going to be between the last knuckle and the bed of the nail, slightly towards the thumb.
Okay, the last knuckle.
Towards the bed of the na and the bed of the nail, slightly towards the thumb, right down the corner.
Okay,
Tor
okay.
more toward There you go.
Okay.
All right. So then under the collarbone. And then now again on the tiny finger, this time between the last knuckle and the bed of the nail, slightly towards the thumb. Very good. And then under the collarbone. Now, I've not been describing these points very well because I'm on a Zoom, so I have to remember that some people may not, so I have to remember to do that. So tap again. No. Okay, so we're good. So now we do the next part, which is you go between the ring finger and the pinky finger knuckles, and go down about a half an inch or so towards your wrist. Now you're going to tap. That's what we call the gamut spot because we use it for a gamut of things. So tapping the gamut spot, close your eyes for a moment. Open your eyes. With your eyes, look down into the left. With your eyes, look down into the right. Now keep tapping and whirl your eyes in a big circle all the way around. That's it. Now whirl them the other way. This is the hardest part, two things at once. Now keep tapping and hum a couple of bars of any tune. Keep tapping, keep tapping. And then count out loud. One. Now
One,
count. Yeah, now count. Two,
two,
three, four, five.
six, seven,
Okay, now hum
eight,
again. We're just changing the focus of the location in a brain, left to right, right to left. And then I want you to repeat the tapping we just did, which is side of hands. Now, this tapping pattern is one of the longest ones that we do in TFT, but under the nose. But it's the general thing that we go to when we don't have time for anything else, beginning in eyebrow. And most people are going to get some relief from this. So if your audience has not been tapping along with us anytime under the eye, you're welcome to anytime. If you have been tapping with us, that's good news. Under the arm. The research is such that we've never found a negative effect from tapping
Okay, good.
itself. The either it works or it does nothing. Tap under the collarbone, index finger. Under the collarbone, tiny finger. Under the collarbone. Okay, now let's just stop for a second, and I want you to pull up that event the same way you did before. Got it? And what are you noticing with the tension and tightness in your body?
It's less.
What's the number now?
Maybe a six.
Okay, so that's good. Now, the reason you didn't go from an 8 to a 1 is because there was a couple of conditions that occurred, and it's not it's I would call it psychological reversal at some level. That doesn't mean anything to anybody else. But if you want, let's see if we can get this below 6. Okay,
Okay, sure.
so just say think of that event and just say. Now, did the way you're thinking about it, did it change at all as we were doing
No,
that?
not
Okay,
really.
good. Okay, so stay focused. I want to be completely over this.
You want me to say that?
Yep.
I want to be completely over this.
Okay. Say, I will be completely over this.
I will be completely over this.
Oh, okay. So you need to tap here under your nose, like 15 times. Okay. Say, I will be completely over this.
I will be completely over this.
Say, this event.
This event.
Okay. Tap at the beginning of the eyebrow. And now I'm going to find specific tapping points by testing on myself. Tiny finger. Oh, that's interesting. Now, on your tiny finger, you want to be towards the thumb side.
Towards the thumb side, okay. So on top, sort of like that.
Right between the last knuckle and the bed of the nail.
Okay, gotcha.
Okay. Now let's see. Now I want you to do the thumb. Yep, between the last knuckle and the bed of the nail. A little more on the corner there. Yeah, good. And then let's see. Then I want you to do the index finger again. Now notice this pattern is different. And the index finger towards the thumb. Towards the thumb. There you go. Then the last pattern we did. Now I want you to just tap on the back of your hand 30 times. Now tap under the collarbone. Say, healing this event.
Healing this event.
Okay, so now we're going to do the nine gamut series. Back of the hand. Close your eyes. Open your eyes. Down left. Down right. Whirl your eyes around. Back the other way. Hum. Count.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9,
Hum.
10.
Then we're going to repeat the points that we did before. So I want you to, let's start here at the eyebrow. Then I want you to tap here 30 times. Tiny finger, thumb, index finger. Gamut spot again.
What are we doing?
Back of the hand again. Gamut spot. And then, appreciate you being patient with this. Tapping under the collarbone again. Now, let's see where we are. So pull up the event again, the same way you did before. And then notice the tension again. And I'll rate it again for me on that 0 to 10 scale.
It's about a 3 now.
About a 3. That's pretty good.
Went down.
Now we can do some more.
Yeah, but we don't want to use the whole hour.
Well, that's what I'm asking you.
Right.
If you were sitting here in my office or we were just doing a session, I would say, let's get it to 0.
Right. Gotcha.
Because that's where people want to get to.
Okay.
And it's important that people recognize that when you were up an 8 or a 9, up in that range, you were feeling it as though it was happening in this moment. And now, as you pull up the event, you're recognizing it more as a memory, not that something's happening right
Okay,
now.
gotcha.
And that is the hallmark of PTSD is the inability to discern the there and then from the here and now.
Gotcha.
And so part of what happens with tapping when you're dealing with trauma is you get people to be fully in the moment, totally. And that becomes a memory of something in the past. Now we can all live with memories. Some are good, some are bad, but we use them, we look at them, they inform us, we share them. And then when we're done with the memory, we put it back, you know, we go on. When you're having a flashback or a trigger experience, you're not able to just put it back
Right.
because it's like it's happening now, and I need to respond like it's happening now. And if I'm going to survive, I have to respond like it's happening now.
Right.
And that's where you end up in this cycle that doesn't allow you to move into a freer place where you can go, oh, I'm safe. I can
Right.
think about what I want to do. I can analyze the data around me. I can come up with a plan, a rational plan. I can come up with a way to move forward. I can do the problem solving. And more importantly, I'm free to act on whatever I choose for me that's best for me in this moment. It's not what it was back then.
Interesting. So we're taking the emotional charge out of it. It's a memory, but not without the emotional charge to it.
Right, right. That, well, that, yeah, that's a good way to think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
Because,
so that's interesting. Right. So this is what the emotional freedom technique is.
Well, emotional freedom technique is actually derived from Dr. Callahan's
That's not what I meant to say. I meant to say the thought field therapy.
Right.
That's and what I meant to say.
Yeah, that's okay. Well, and the thing is that emotional freedom technique, it's the most heard of, most tested energy psychology. And basically, it's tapping on meridian points, just like what we did.
Mm-hmm.
But they use one tapping pattern for everything. And they're more focused on how you tune the thought or the words that you use. What are the setups that you're doing?
Gotcha.
And I would never say to you that EFT doesn't work, because we've got lots of research that says it does. The thing about EFT is that it was developed by a student of Dr. Callahan's. He was a student for 3 years, one of his most advanced students. And at some point, Gary Craig's a good man, but he was an engineer. He was an entrepreneur. He's a businessman. Roger and he had a disagreement about what was really important about tapping. And he said, no, I just want to get this to people in the simplest form possible. So he took this one pattern, one approach kind of way. And it is wonderful. Now, the problem becomes for me as a professional helper is, what if that doesn't work? And in some cases, it's not going to work. And if people out there know EFT and it's working for you, I don't want to try to dissuade you from that at all. But if people know EFT and it's not working for you, then you need something more complex.
Okay.
And that's where thought field therapy is today, okay. Is we provide that.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, it's so nice when I, as a professional, I've been doing this a long time. I'm 72 years old. I've been doing this stuff for, I've been doing TFT since 96, but I've been in the field since, you know, early 70s in one form or another. And what's wonderful for me is, even when I don't know what I'm working with, I can communicate, I can connect with the internal healer, with your internal healer, your internal wisdom. And that's what was guiding us in finding the pattern that was more useful to you than the standard pattern.
Okay.
And that connection, I think, is one of the things that Dr. Callan did, is he found a way for us to communicate directly with that part of us that doesn't have words. Mm-hmm. It's in the bottom of the brain. It's in the heart. It's in the body.
Gotcha.
And the part of us that uses words is in the top of the brain.
Right.
There's a language center up there.
Yes.
And so we can use the words to help us identify what's going on. But the problem is that with trauma, most of the time, what's happening is not,
it's not on the cognitive level. Yes.
No. And so you can't get at it cognitively, mm-hmm. but you can get at it energetically. And then once the body calms down, once the heart settles, once the thought field has the perturbations removed, however you want to talk about it, then we can be in the moment and recognize what we need to do to take care of ourselves and the people we love.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. That makes a lot of sense. And this is, you know, when I work with people who have gone through narcissistic abuse, or actually when I talk to people about it, I always say to them, this is not a place you can reach on your own. This is trauma. This is deeply embedded subconscious and in your body and in your nervous system trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we try to do is we try to think our way out of these things. And there are, when you're traumatized, you cannot think your way out. So this is a wonderful method to be able to get to that. Now, do people identify what the trauma is, or do they just picture it?
Well, it depends on who they are and what we're doing. You know, I'm a psychotherapist, and it depends on the relationship I have. Some people just want to go into depth to understand it more completely.
Okay.
And so they share the picture, they share the events, they share the relationships, where
gotcha.
It came from.
Because they haven't worked through them. Yes, I understand.
Yeah,
they
and so,
need to talk about it.
Right. But, you know, at a crisis intervention level, when you have an experience that overwhelms you and your systems aren't working, then in crisis intervention, all we care about is getting you back to functioning. And so you don't ask questions about, well, where did that come from? And, you know, it's like, okay, think about it, notice it, tap. And we want to bring that back down. So at a crisis intervention, I've done a lot of crisis intervention stuff at different levels in my life. It's a unique tool that brings us back. Then after that, we say, okay, is there anything else you need to work on or need support in as you go forward? And if they're saying, well, I want to be supported as I go through, you may end up in a counselor role. You're not trying to change how they perceive or respond, but you're trying to help them function better in different ways. And there's lots of places for thought field therapy in that.
Okay. So my next question is, say you have had a traumatic childhood that went on for years, pretty much from birth to the time that you actually exited that home.
Right.
So the trauma is multi-level. There's so many things. Many of the things have been repeated. Some were shocking, some were not, but it's an all-encompassing traumatic
right.
feeling. How do
right.
you approach that?
Well, the thing that you have to understand is that now you're not just dealing with a traumatic incident. You're dealing with a traumatic incident, especially when we're talking about childhood neglect or abuse of any kind, that it's really how you come to formulate your perception of the world and your response to that world.
Okay.
And so we have to begin to look at what would be the best way to approach it, because we're not talking about just relieving or eliminating that one event.
Right.
We have to go in, and that's the psychotherapy. So you got crisis intervention, you got counseling, and then you got psychotherapy.
Okay. So you use the psychotherapy in that way. Okay.
Right.
So, right. And I'll just use myself as an example. So,
okay.
So I've done an enormous amount of work, and I help other people. I'm trained in certain trauma relief therapies and things like that and everything.
Yeah.
But what I notice is it has lodged in my body in a way in which pretty much every 5 years, another layer is released.
Okay.
Now I'm 65 years old. It's still happening. Okay.
Yeah.
So, and I'm going through it right now. So another layer is being released. And I know that because I recognize it. I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm fine. And then all of a sudden, boom. So it's my body saying, okay, we got the other ones now. So when it's so stacked on,
right.
You know, there's so much there. And also my nervous system is affected because I never co-regulated to a normal nervous system or
right.
the environment I was in.
Right.
So,
right.
Not so possible. Right. So there's a lot of things going on. So is this psychotherapy or is this what, how do you approach something like this?
Okay. So if you were my client, what I would say to you is, first of all, I would want you to know that your experience is very normal because the thing that happens is that as we go through different phases in our lives, we are going to have a different perception, a different way of understanding, a different depth of where we're at. And so it's not unusual that throughout cycles in our lives, we think we're done with it. And then, oh my God, you know, a woman comes to me and she says, I thought I was done with it. And then she says, But you know, it's all coming back to me. And I said, "Well, how old's your child?" "Oh, he just turned 7." "Oh, when did the worst trauma happen to you?" "Oh, when I was 7." "Oh, so now you're seeing your 7-year-old experience in a different way because you're observing and understanding what it means to be a 7-year-old in a different way." And so there's nothing unusual about
So
that.
for
So,
me as an adult,
yeah.
when I'm looking back, I'm experiencing that in a way where I've processed a lot of different things. But
Right.
what is exactly is lodged within me?
Well, okay. It's not necessarily, how do we describe this? So you're feeling it right now. I mean, I'm looking at you and I'm seeing that you're in touch with it.
Oh,
And
very much
why
so.
you, yeah, and why you said you were at a 3 a few moments ago, I would say you're not at a 3 now. Would I
Exactly.
be accurate?
It's back, yes.
What's the number now?
So now it's about a 6 again.
Okay. And has the focus of the incident changed? Okay. So what I might do is I would say to you, focus on that incident, however it's changed. And what I want you to do is then, this is more in depth than, well, we'll see.
Okay, so
So,
just in general,
okay, no, stay with you because I don't want to leave you to 6. Okay.
okay, all right.
So what I'm going to ask you to do is what I would do with this is I would say, feel that level and that event. And then I would ask you to say, when you're in that state, when you're feeling that right now, how old are you? And how old were you the first time you remember feeling that feeling?
I want to say 7.
Okay. So whatever was happening there, we could do a little inner child work that might be helpful.
Right. And
So
I don't want to do it now. I really don't. I'm just really curious because I understand that in the work that I do, many
yeah.
people are experiencing what I'm experiencing.
Well,
So,
and a lot of people are going to get traumatized with that. But if you would let me give you a sense of it. So what we want to do is if you were doing an inner child kind of approach, I would say, see the 7-year-old, visualize that, feel it, whatever you do, and notice that that 7-year-old has a right to feel whatever they feel because they're in that event and they didn't have any power or control. And then I would ask the person to say, now I want you to visualize, to imagine that you, as the adult that you are today, are walking up beside that 7-year-old. And you put your hand on the 7-year-old and you say, "It's okay, honey. I get it. I know you get to feel it however you feel it. You get to do whatever you want with it. But I want you to know I'm here
here, right.
and I got this. You don't have to do it." Now, and then the next step would be say, let's tap for the 7-year-old. So if you want to do a quick tapping, we'll do a tapping for the 7-year-old and we'll get back to
Right.
getting you out of
That's
that
okay.
too.
That's okay.
All right.
I sort of have the gist of it. And yeah, that inner
Okay.
child work, I do that with a lot of people. We go
Right. I
back
think it's very powerful stuff.
we go back into the scene. So I can actually do this with myself. I can take
Yes.
myself back.
Yes.
Calm
Right.
myself down, give myself protection and support at that point. Gotcha.
Yes. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay,
And
I
then
got it.
immediately you're going to notice that there's a change because now you're acting from the adult without the interference. I shouldn't say the interference, without the help and assistance of a 7-year-old.
Right. Exactly.
And
Gotcha.
I
Gotcha.
come from a place of all behavior is functional. All behavioral has a purpose, and that if one of the things I try to do is be clear with people, if you're changing behavior, let's understand where that came from and the function that it has in your life today. And now that we understand it, we can see how there's a better way to do it now. And so you can change that behavior.
Interesting.
So that's the advantage, in the work that I do in addictions, with alcoholics or drug
Oh,
addicts.
wow.
Well, it's all about trying to quiet that child that is in terror that is overwhelmed. And so if we can't deal with the feelings any other way, well, we sedate it. And that's with the alcohol and the drugs. Now, that's not the same that as when you take a specific medication, psychiatric medication. That is because there's something happened in your body in development that you were born with, or probably as a result of the terrible stress that you lived in, that your body's capacity to create certain hormones or neurotransmitters has been harmed. And so I want to just, I'll be clear with you. I don't think medication works for everybody, but, you know, my experience is half the people out there will get some benefit. If they've tried therapy for 6 months or a year and they still need more, you go try it. And my experience is that you got to find the right med, and that takes, the only way you know is to take it.
Trial and error. Yes. I completely agree with you. And, you know, in the research that I've done, and I'm the author of this book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, this one. I'm the author.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So, and one of the chapters I have talks about the research of children who grow up in emotionally angry homes and how it affects the hypothalamus and the development of the brain and the emotional regulation and so forth and so on. And so, you know, there are, for people who've grown up with this long-term thing in childhood, there's a very strong possibility that they may need a little brain chemistry help.
Oh, absolutely. And I find that when you get to a point where you can say, oh, this is where I have trouble generating this feeling or this response or this action, that it's maybe time to think about, after you've done all the tapping and all the stuff you can, maybe it's time to just say, let's give it a little boost. Now, if you do that, what I would say to you is go to a psychiatrist who knows traumatic stress response. Don't, if you have to, you go to your GP and he'll give you something. But the idea here is you really want to go to somebody who knows this and knows the meds, because sometimes a psychiatrist will give you a med not for the primary effect, but for the side effect that comes with that med as a way to heal your particular deficit.
I agree with you. I agree with you. And I always tell people, you know, it's going to take patience. You may have to try a few things. And it does take, if you're doing an SSRI, it can take 4 to 6 weeks before you feel the effect and, you know, and all of those kind of things. So it's a bit of a journey.
Yeah, it is.
So I completely agree with you on that. What is the difference between, on your sheet it says, between the big T trauma and the small T trauma? What is the difference?
Well, it's just what you're talking about, which is big T trauma. Anybody can say, on that date, that place, I got hit by that car, I broke that bone. And it's very specific. Now you don't want to get in the car. You're having trouble healing that bone. And big T trauma is stuff that's easily accessible and identifiable. The small T trauma is the stuff that happens with the violence, primarily as a child.
Right.
I'm very much into violence is at the core of these kinds of things. And that violence causes us to have different responses, to develop in different ways. And, you know, it may interfere with our biochemical process.
Yes.
Stress does. We know
it really
that.
Does.
There's no question about it. So the small T trauma that I'm talking about here is the stuff that you wouldn't point to and say, oh, you know, it's, you know, the big T trauma. One time in my life, my father slapped me when I was 13.
Right,
now that's
right.
Big T trauma. I can tell you that was good. Now, the beauty of that was my father came back later and said, sorry about that, Bob. And, you know, that wasn't my life.
Right.
Now,
exactly.
For people whose life had been from the time they were, you know, old enough to know that if they don't keep people around them happy, that they're going to get hurt, or somebody they love is going to get hurt, changes how we interact and what we do. And that is the continual small t trauma, the violence. You see, my definition of violence is pretty straightforward.
It can be emotional. Violence. It can be emotional or physical, right?
Right. And it's the violence is any time that our basic rights are infringed upon.
Okay. Gotcha.
And what are our basic rights? I think it's very clear. We're human beings. We get to think what we think and give expression to that. We get to feel what we feel and give expression to that.
Okay,
we get to choose to do what we want to do, as long as we're not hurting anybody else. And that's what it means to have your basic rights.
I like this, and I really want to focus on this. I want everybody to hear this, you know, because people say, well, I wasn't abused because I wasn't hit. But say that again, just to drive this home, okay? So violence is an infringement on your personal rights.
Your basic rights, which are to think your thoughts and give expression to them, to feel your feelings and give expression to them, and to make the choices that fit who you are in an authentic way, and to act on those choices, to behave in that way, as long as you're not harming anyone else.
Right.
Because
Good.
We live in a joint world. Good. So the difficulty becomes think about, now this is the part that drives me crazy. I'll be sitting with some friends or in a public space or something, and I'll hear a kid, a parent say to the kid, oh, stop it. You don't think that, because they just said something the parent doesn't like. And they go, you don't think that. That's not how you think. You know, this is what you think. Now, to me, that's a major violation, because that child has been told he can't think what he thinks. And more importantly, he's learned now, I can't think what I think and give expression to it, because that's dangerous.
Yes.
Or, you know, I can't tell you the number of times, a parent will say to a kid, don't feel that way. Don't feel that. Focus on something else. Don't feel it. You don't feel that, mm-hmm. you know. And so can the kid cry to give expression to that? No. Can he just say, I'm hurt this way, or I'm angry that way? You can't. So the kid learns very quickly that giving expression to who he is is not okay.
Yes.
And can be very dangerous in some cases.
And especially long term.
Oh, yeah.
If this is your experience from birth till the time you become an adult, how do you develop an identity? How do you be a self? How do you know who you are? How do you?
Well, you don't. You become a slave.
You become a slave. That's exactly right.
See, and to me, the interesting thing was, I've spent some time thinking about this, that, you know, what does it take to be a good slave? Well, what it takes, if you're a slave owner, if you own someone, what you want more than anything else is to replace their will with your own will.
Okay.
So the idea here is that your will does not count. Your choices, your feelings, your thinking doesn't count if it doesn't serve my will.
That's exactly right. And now we're talking about narcissistic abuse.
Yes. And that's how I see it, is that when you're raised in that way where you're not allowed to have your will, you were raised in a slave environment. And to function in that slave environment means you have to make certain adaptations. Certain parts of yourself have to become, you know, the overseer.
Yep.
Because the overseer's job, and they might have been a slave themselves, was to make sure that the will of the master is the primary focus.
Yes.
And so you internalize this capacity to set aside your own at all costs.
At all costs.
At all pains.
It's very, very dangerous
not
to do that.
And so you become very good at being able to do that. And then what happens when the slave owner dies? I mean, what happens when the Emancipation Proclamation comes to your town and you go, oh, I'm free.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have to figure out, what does that mean if you still have that internal overseer kind of mentality? And we see that a lot in what happened after the Civil War and to people. I'm not an expert on it, but it seems to me a good model for us to understand where we are today in terms of race relationships. Where we are today is because for centuries we were telling people they couldn't be who they are. And then all of a sudden you're saying, well, you're free, you can do what you want. But you weren't because of Jim Crow and because of a whole lot of other things. But we're still struggling with that as a culture. I don't want to go down that road
Right,
because,
but that makes sense. I understand that.
I'm not an expert in it, but
And is
it
that
helps
passed
me.
genetically? Does that come through the genes?
I do think that there's a capacity for people to genes to be influenced.
Okay.
Epigenetics is very clear these days that we are what we do, what we produce, is influenced by the culture and the energy around us, including our parents and including going back for generations of which genes seem to work best.
Yes.
So yes, I do think we are still struggling with that as a world. I mean, and I think about the women who are enslaved in Afghanistan right now, and I'm my just the thought of it
Horrible.
is so painful, because those women are not being allowed to be who they are, and they're not even allowed to be able to utter the words
Their
to.
individuality has been murdered.
And I it just it's so sad to me. And my hope
Is
is
that?
someday we live in a world where people are free, and can be who they are. I'm so grateful that I live where I live and that I've had this experience in my life.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of what you're saying is just so. I'm going to actually quote you and put these in some little memes because I like the way that you have worded a
Well,
lot of this. It
thank you.
really explains it. You know, what I notice is when we go through a childhood like this, all of a sudden we're in an adult world supposed to function as an adult, and we haven't developed into an adult. We just aren't there.
Right.
Physically, we are, but we have not had the tools that we need to function in an adult world, right?
Right. And so you're this a 7-year-old who's like in this adult world. Well, what do? You do what you did when you were seven, which is you
Exactly.
look for somebody to direct you, somebody to take control, because that feels familiar, that feels safe,
Yes,
right? And
exactly.
then you get into it and you go, well, this is not what I was expecting. This is not what I was wanting.
And I didn't want to repeat this pattern, but look at me. I did
Oh, no, you didn't. No, you didn't. Trust me. If you're having this podcast,
They're not me. I'm just saying. I'm
oh,
quoting. Not
yes.
me. Oh, I have no.
Oh,
Long time ago. Okay.
I'm going. Okay.
Long time ago. Work through
Good.
all that. Okay. Work through all that.
Well, and
Okay.
this is the
Got it.
work that helps you be who you are, to be the authentic Randy, the way that you choose to be.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
No, and I think it's sad for people who have not been able to find the resources or the support to be able to make that leap. I've done a lot of couples work in my life, and it's like, this thing about we marry our fathers, we marry our mothers. There's a lot of truth to that.
There is.
But I would say, people have to recognize that that's because they're operating at an immature emotional level. So if you're still operating at a 13-year-old emotional level and you're looking for a mate, you're looking for another 13-year-old emotional level.
Oh, wow.
That's how we come
Whoa,
together.
that's big.
Well, and that happens so much. And then the problem is that one of them will come together, we're 13 emotionally. And then one of them starts to grow, and grows faster than the other. They both grow, but one grows faster than the other. Or maybe something happens, like you have a child, and suddenly you
You got to
it
grow
matures
up.
you very quickly, right? And so now you've got this emotional kind of levels that don't work anymore. I mean, he's still operating from that 13-year-old level, and he hasn't figured out that don't work anymore. She's operating from a 25-year-old level, a fully mature level, and that relationship is never going to work. Now, you can hold it together for financial reasons, you can hold it together for family reasons, you can hold it together, but it ain't a love-focused marriage, you know.
No. You know, a
And
lot of people are afraid of growth for that very reason. They don't want to leave their partner behind, you know.
and there's no way to pull them along. I mean, you can, I love the phrase, you can take a horse to water, but you can't make him drink.
Right. And you
I
know,
think.
what's really interesting is I've changed a lot. I've been married for 35 years, and
Oh, congratulations.
yeah, thank you. It's my second one. My first one was ugh. But
You're at a different emotional level. I get
right,
it.
completely. But right, but my husband was not where I was, and he wasn't growing on his own. But he did come along with me. He did the whole way, and I had leaps and bounds, and he just kind of hung on for dear life. And wrote it, and you know, he's like, okay, all right, you know.
Well, and that was his growth pattern, was to let you do it first, see how it works for her,
Right. And then
see how it
hang
works for
on
us.
and go for the ride.
Yeah, and now, okay, I can do that.
Exactly. So that I've been very fortunate, but I saw that in the beginning. I knew that he had that, you know, that ability to do that, whereas my first husband had not. He wasn't going anywhere.
No, and it's not worth the investment of time or energy.
Right. So that's interesting what you said about the couples, and that makes sense.
And if they both want to do the work, you know, they can come back to a place where they can be closer, or they can be more functional, or at least they can support each other. Even, you know, if you say your husband's down here, that's fine. He's still supporting your growth.
Yep, absolutely.
But he doesn't have to take the lead. That's not required.
No.
Well, I'm glad it's working out for you. My wife and I have been together, what are we, 47 years now.
Wow, that's great.
Is it
And
47?
grandchildren?
Nah, we never chose to have children. It was a decision that was sort of snuck up on us at some point, but somewhere around in my 40s, I said, okay, she's clear she's not having kids. She's always been clear she didn't want kids. And I said, you know, if I want kids in my life, am I willing to give up a perfectly wonderful marriage to go to find another woman? Maybe, and that's a crapshoot, whether you find
That
another
is a
woman,
crapshoot.
and then whether you find a woman who wants another woman who wants to have a kid. And then do you find, you know, what is it, about 1/6, 1/5 of all couples are infertile? So then you may not even work there. So it's kind
Exactly.
of like I
So
said,
true.
I'm going with a sure thing here.
I'm one of three girls, and I'm the only one with children.
Well, you know, that's because you grew to a place where that made sense in your life.
It always
You
made
know,
sense in my life, yeah.
yeah. And so do I think at 72, do I think, well, I wish I had children? Well, of course I do. I look at all the wonderful stuff that you get with children and grandchildren and all that, and then I think, oh, I don't have it. And then I spend some time around kids.
And you're like, okay, that's fun for a little while. My
But
only grandson is getting ready to turn a year old next week. And this is a really big thing because I only have one grandchild, two children, but one grandchild so far. But yeah, it's a big thing.
That's wonderful. Well, you see, and that's wonderful. I'm glad you have that in your life. You know,
Yeah.
those are the things that bring joy and beauty to us. You
So,
know.
Bob, are you you're obviously still in practice and people are still working with you. Are you working outside of your state? Virtually, or are you only in your state virtually? How do you do this?
I'm at a point in my life where I don't have to work if I don't want to work. We've been there for quite a while, actually. But I really enjoy doing the work. So I still do 15 clinical hours a week, and I want to be doing 10. So
Yeah.
it's getting more and more difficult for me to say I'm going to do this. And the other thing is I do these 4-day trainings twice a year that
Okay.
take a lot of energy to do.
You do this with professionals, right?
Well, no, not anymore.
No.
When I started, it was all professionals, and the training was called Engaging Clients Fearlessly.
Okay.
And that's because I was wanting to focus on helping people who help other folks. And what I've realized now is I'm going to change the name of it to Engaging Fearlessly,
Okay.
because it means that you can engage with yourself, with the people you love, with the people who pay you to help them, without this fear of, oh God, I don't know where it's going to go or I can't stand it. Because even when I get vicariously traumatized and it's painful and it's difficult, I can tap for myself and I can keep going. So the
Where do
training,
you do these trainings?
pardon?
Where do you do the trainings?
Oh, it's in San Diego. It's live. The next one is April 11th through the 14th. I still have some space open if people want to travel here to do it. It's on my website. You can look at it.
Okay, and your
I'll be
website is Ray.
www.rlbray.com.
Perfect, perfect. Okay, so people can see what you're up to. They might be able to slip in for one of your 10 hours of clinical work. But are you do you sort of cherry pick what you take now to fit into sort of a
Well, yeah, I'm one of the things is that I'm stopping taking insurance, so people have to pay. And which, if you're out of state, doesn't matter anyway, because I'm
exactly.
only licensed in California, so insurance is going to pay me if you're in another state.
Right, exactly.
What I'm doing more these days is I'm saying, let me work with you for 6 or 8 weeks, show you what I've got, do some stuff with you, and then let's see at that point. Are you done with me? Do we know specifically what the work is that you need to do? Because we'll know at that point. You can get some of that work done other places.
Okay, good.
So I'm trying to limit what I do with people to less of the supportive counseling kind of stuff and more to the,
Guiding, guiding.
trying to get to something so I can reach more people. And that, and I want to do more training in thought field therapy. I was just invited to do a training at a group called Whistleblowers of America.
Oh, wow.
These are people who have blown the whistle, mostly government folks, but there's a tremendous price you pay for that. You lose your
Yes.
job, you lose your, anyway, so they have a group. So they asked me to come do a
Oh,
4-hour
that's
training.
really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm excited about doing more training. And so I'm open to going places to do the training also.
Okay, sounds great. Well, it's been
Yeah.
so wonderful to talk to you. See, I told you it'd be really like organic, and we're just gonna go where
Oh,
we
yeah,
go, and
no.
we went into some really good places. But all in all, what you said is ideal for what my audience needs to
I
hear. And
think
so
so. I
there's
think.
so much that you said that will resonate with the people that are watching. So I thank you tremendously for being my guest today. It's been fun.
Well, it's been a pleasure. I would love to come back if you have more questions somewhere down the line.
Sure.
This is, yeah, as you say, this was an easy conversation. So thank you very much.
You're welcome. All right. Well, have a wonderful day.
Thank
Take
you.
care.